This crowd rises to its feet.
Vaccaro slammed it home.
Garland left wing, three ball.
Perfect.
Garland went to the lane, locked the Mobley, pow.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Pow with the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo, the official streaming partner of the Cavs. Watch over 350 channels of live sports and TV, including Bally Sports Ohio, without cable. There's no cost and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com/Cavs. The Cleveland Cavaliers start their final homestand of the year with a win over the Memphis Grizzlies. It was not as easy as we probably would have liked in the first half, but the Cavs put it together in the third quarter and came away with a comfortable win. Joining me today to discuss this is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. I told Kylie mid first quarter when things were a little rough. I was like, I'm a little worried that, you know, they've been struggling a little bit and they're down. They're down right now to a team that's missing 12 guys. And Kylie goes, missing? What happened? So we considered a true crime podcast to find the 12 missing Grizzly players. We really went down the rabbit hole with that bit, but
respect to the Memphis Grizzlies, if the Cavs were to lose to this version of the Grizzlies, I think we could file missing persons reports for them. I mean, this is absolutely a game that they should have won, and they did. It took a little bit of time, you know. The first half, I saw a lot of people kind of freaking out over Jake LaRavia knocking down a billion threes and some of the shots Memphis was hitting. But even with all of that, it goes to what I've talked about, which is sometimes people will focus on the shooting variance and stuff like that, when really it's what you're doing. And the Cavs did not shoot well at the rim. They generated a bunch of threes that they weren't hitting, and there just wasn't a ton of pain presence. And I thought in the third quarter, The Cavs defense, I think, actually was pretty steady throughout the night. The results just looked better as Memphis kind of regressed back to the mean. But I thought the Cavs offensive process was a whole lot better because the center of the paint was available for the majority of this night. And Cleveland really was just kind of letting Memphis off the hook by settling for jumpers outside of it.
Yeah, I mean, and also just not finishing with force inside of it. Serena, I think, had the stat on the Bally's post game that Cavs shot 35% in the paint in the first half, 65% in the second half. So, you know, again, like, you know, it was one of those games where, you know, for a minute you kind of, your eyebrows were raised, like, is this going to happen? They put it together. You know, they went out in the third quarter, took control of the game, and, you know, at that point, they were just kind of able to sail the rest of the way, you know, really putting the clamps on Memphis. And again, on when the team's offense has been so up and down, you know, I think one of the disappointing things has been the fact that the defense has been just as up and down. You know, they were, I don't remember what they were going into this game, but, you know, a couple games ago, they were 21st in offense, 21st in defense. And, you know, it kind of felt like a team that didn't really know what to hang their hat on. And, you know, they asked Darius, the press asked Darius at post game, like, hey, did, you know, someone light a fire under you at half? He's like, no, we just needed to be better, you know? And they kind of went out with a cool confidence to take over that game with a 30-16 quarter where, you know, they just really locked down Memphis from there. And also kind of found their groove on the offensive end in doing so, you know? I think there is something to be said for the team's defense kind of still does fuel the offense. And I thought they really found that in the second half of this one tonight.
Well, I think a thing we consistently see with the Cavs is when they are playing with solid pace, typically that's coming off of stops, right? Like off of a made basket, they are a little more prone to walk the ball up the court, to take their time offensively. And, you know, there's been very few exceptions to that. Like I remember the Sacramento game where the Kings were hitting shots and the Cavs were still pushing after makes, but those games are few and far between. I think tonight is more kind of in line with what the Cavs are when, you know, things are working properly. And I don't think there's a ton of things that you can necessarily take away from beating what's left of Memphis. I understand that this is a group that did beat Milwaukee recently. But really, like, this was just kind of one of those get right games. And I joked in our Discord, and I believe on Twitter as well with our buddy Jordan Zerm. But I was saying the Cavs are a little bit like me right now. You got to kind of learn to walk again before you can run. Your boy is finally out of the boot. I am
so walking. Happy for you, man. Happy for you.
I've got shoes on. I can walk. It's slow. It's steady. But, you know, I'm making progress every single day, and that feels great. But the Cavs are, you know, I think it's a little bit similar here. Maybe this was the perfectly timed get right game for them, where, you know, you had the 2 days off after a very, very long trip and a exhausting just travel schedule. You get this get right game. You didn't give 48 minutes against the Grizzlies, but you started to figure some things out. And, you know, you got this opportunity on Friday against the Indiana Pacers to really make a statement, to get a solid 48 minutes. You know, it doesn't all happen at once, but, you know, I think as fans, we're going to sit here and hope that it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. And I think we probably have to start talking about the step in the right direction with Donovan Mitchell, who I would say definitely played his best game post All-Star break. 29 points, 9 of 17 from the field, 5 of 10 from 3, got to the line 7 times, 8 assists, 3 steals, like...
And a block? Like, 3 block. Stocks. 3 stocks, yeah. Or 4 stocks. 4. That's a great, great sign for a guy that we're trying to see that lift from him, right?
Yeah, and it does feel like, especially with the team in the state they're in right now, that you just are looking for someone to be able to kind of carry them through some stuff while we wait on everything else to click. And like, yeah, there's a couple of days off, and that certainly helps someone like Donovan. And he didn't play against the Clippers, so he hadn't played since
Saturday.
Whatever. Saturday? Friday? I don't remember. I'm bad with days.
Days are hard. Proceed.
But you know, I think if this is indeed an indicator that things are ramping up and not just, you know, not just that his knee felt pretty good tonight. I thought he moved a lot better tonight than he has in the last couple weeks.
I think so too. And, you know, I've been pessimistic. Maybe that's my way of kind of guarding myself. It's not in my nature to be a little bit pessimistic, but I'm taking a chapter out of some other fans that we know where I'm guarding myself a little bit, where I've been worried about this knee and whether or not it was going to get right. And I think the encouraging thing to me is that every time he steps on the court, it looks a little bit better. Like against the Lakers, I thought he was moving better laterally defensively. I thought tonight he was getting more lift off of his shots. That gives me hope that, okay, maybe there is a larger component of this that's conditioning. Like the whatever he's been dealing with when it comes to the knee and whatnot, it's getting better and it's progressing in the right direction. The earliest playoffs can start, or the earliest that the Cavs can play in the playoffs, is April 20th. So we got 2 games between now and April 20th. So 2 games in 10 days, that's a lot of time for him to continue to get things right, to get the right treatment. I think, you know, obviously, I think it's fair to say after seeing these last couple games from him that more time on the court is actually yielding positive results. It's not like he's regressing. It's not like it looks the same and man, like just shut him down kind of thing. He's starting to get that lift. I think getting 3 steals and a block, contributing on the glass, getting to the free throw line, as you mentioned, those are all important indicators. I still think there's a couple times where, you know, he gets by the first guy and like gets blocked by Lamar Stevens at the rim. But before, he wasn't even able to get the initial burst to get into the hole. It's just at this point, you know, he makes that first move and he's still trying to figure out kind of the explosion once he gets to the rim. There was a couple errant passes where he left his feet a little too soon or he didn't get the angle that he thought and bailed out of the shot. That's the kind of stuff that I'm still kind of going to keep an eye on to see if it improves. But I do think that the signs physically are there that it's trending in the right direction. And like, honestly, the Donovan Mitchell that we got tonight, if that's what we're getting, if that's the bare minimum of what we're getting, I think that's enough to feel okay about what you can do in a playoff series if everybody else gets to the standard that we know that they can play at.
Yeah, and he kind of feels like the one that, for better or worse, is the furthest away from his form. You know, Darius, I think, is certainly far away from his form. We expect Jarrett's been up and down, though. Heck of an answer in the second half after a pretty rough first half for him.
Yeah, I want to get into that in a little more detail later, but yeah, continue.
But, you know, I think Donovan is the one who feels the furthest away from his ceiling, you know. And I kind of forget when he's in this state. You know, I feel like most fans have the memory of a fish, but I sometimes can be right there too. And you look at the pre-All-Star game stretch, he puts up 31, 29, 40, 27, 15 in a blowout that he just didn't have to play that much in, 36 and 30. Then after the All-Star break, 9, 16, 31, 19, 14, 13, 12, 13, 24, 10, 29. Like, this dude has not been the same player, not even close. And it's like, it is funny to kind of, like, how much mental effort we've put into what's wrong with the Cavs mm-hmm. when, like a big thing is, like, Donovan has not been himself. So any signs we see that say, well, there you are. Like, that goes a really, really long way.
I'm so proud of you for saying that sentence without doing a "there you are, Peter."
Well, I'm not a one-trick pony, brother.
You know, I'm just
I can avoid things.
But you're totally right. Like, I was, you know, reflecting back on that pre-All-Star break stretch where it's like, okay, you have Cavs get two wins, then you have that 3-1 stretch where no Mitchell, no Garland, no Mobley. We're Strus, Jarrett, all those guys step up and we get those wins. Then we go 9-3 with Mitchell and Allen. That's where they really kind of get that chemistry going. The two of them, 119 offensive rating. Then Mobley comes back. Then Garland comes back. You go 9-1. All right, we've got this momentum going. The offense got even better at that point. 121 offensive rating. Let's go. Then the All-Star breaks out, hits, and we haven't seen healthy Donovan Mitchell since. And that is such a long time. Like you said, I think you could be forgiven for almost forgetting to some extent of just how great things were. And, you know, there is no magic push button and get everybody back into their form in that at that period of time.
If you have one, push button.
But buddy, I would be slapping the hell out of the thing. But, you know, I think you saw the toll that stretch took on everybody, right? Like, nobody that was contributing in that stretch is the same physically. Like, you could tell Jarrett's burnt out. Max has been burnt out. Donovan. Dean Wade hasn't been back, right?
Isaac, we might not see Dean for the rest of the season. You know, we don't know.
Right. So, like, that 14-game stretch or whatever it was, like, that took a lot out of this team. And, you know, they've overcome a ton, and we just keep hoping that given some time, given some rest, given the veteran leadership that they have, that they can get back to that form at the right time, right? And it's, from a fan standpoint, having confidence that that's going to occur is difficult given what we've seen. I don't think tonight is necessarily going to change minds, but when you're talking about, okay, what signs from this game can you actually take away? I think top of the list, it's how Donovan Mitchell looks physically, because that is one of the things that can't be answered by, hey, is so-and-so going to have better decision-making, right? Like, when it comes to Darius, I think he's starting to actually get some of his burst back. I think, you know, the decision-making comes and goes. He's not always, you know, taking the right shots that we'd want to see out there. Sometimes, you know, he'll have those stretches like he had in the third quarter where he throws two turnovers that just should not be happening. And then there's other stretches where he plays better. You have Jarrett in the first half and Jarrett in the second half. You have Mobley figuring out, right? Like, a lot of that's going to come down to decision-making and guys' execution and rediscovering their form. Whereas Donovan, like, it's a physical question. Like, I know he's going to go out there and he's going to compete to the best of his abilities, but it's all about where he can get to physically.
I wonder how much just getting that mask off helps him. You know, some guys just do not like playing with that kind of stuff on. You know, and apparently he was, Evan Damerill tweeted that Donovan was supposed to wear it tonight and he forgot and he was like, screw it.
I love that.
I'm rolling now. And like, I do think there's something about like shedding that apparatus that like helps you just focus on the game. You're not thinking about the sweat getting caught in between all the crevices and you're, you know, seeing it in your peripherals and things like that. I think that stuff has more of an impact than we want to acknowledge most of the time.
Yeah. playing with a mask is one of the few things that I didn't have to go through as a player, as a very, very injury-prone
person. That's nice
person.
That you avoided one injury.
I was about to say, as one of the most injury-prone
really a lower
people,
body kind of problem for you.
Yeah. I got some clarification of what may have contributed to my Achilles. Apparently, when you have tons of ankle sprains, things can get a little hairy down there.
You go.
Not something you want to be dealing with, but it was definitely good to see him play better. Mentioned Darius and the turnovers in the third quarter. I actually thought he was a little loose with the ball earlier in the game, and just the way the ball bounced, he didn't get a turnover on those possessions, and either a member of the Cavs was able to collect it or he was able to get it himself, but he just wasn't sharp with the ball.
Well, it was no doubt a very silly game. For long stretches.
Yes, and that was not confined to just him, but I did like seeing, you know, we talk about him kind of rediscovering that floor in terms of impact. I thought that this was at least one of those nights where the floor was there, right? Like, we won his first half minutes. He was getting guys open looks. We weren't making those shots. Started making those shots in the second half, but this wasn't as strong of a game as he had it against both LA teams. But it wasn't disastrous, right? Like, the impact was there. The playmaking was there. He started hitting some shots. He kept taking threes, even though he wasn't making them. That was nice to see. Ended up 2 of 9. If you just, you know, if that's a 4 for 9 game, this game feels even more comfortable, particularly if some of those drop in the first half. But, you know, I thought it was at least, you know, a positive step in the right direction as well there.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was definitely nice to see Darius kind of bounce back from, I think he started 0 of 7 from 3.
Mm-hmm,
and then hit 2, you know, kept shooting, you know, 6 boards. Again, like, it's so hard to, like, index too much on a game because, I mean, this poor Memphis team is the most injured team I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say. So it's tough, but, you know, seeing 6 boards for him, you know, just helping finish possessions and things like that, that level of engagement you want to see, you know, 16 and 9 is nothing to, like, throw a party about, but it's certainly good enough. And again, we're just looking for the micro trends that kind of push things forward and make things a little bit, you know, and instill that hope for us.
Yeah. And you want to see the rebounding from those other position groups, right? Because ideally, and when they're playing well, Mobley and Allen are going to go out there and get theirs. But as much as there was focus in last year's playoffs on you know, Jared Allen's rebounding and Evan Mobley's rebounding, a lot of the offensive rebounds and the second chance opportunities were coming from those other positions, right? It was coming from Josh Hart. It was coming from RJ Barrett. Yeah, like Mitchell Robinson, I know he killed us in that series, but at the end of the day, he averaged 9 and 10. Like, that's... Yeah. That's something you can survive as a team. It was everybody else that was contributing. So to get that kind of, you know, rebounding help from those other positions, that's that valuable support, the type of support that we get from Zoom. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. Want to also shout out, because we talked about this on the last podcast, Evan Mobley. I liked his physicality a whole lot more in this game. There's a couple times where, you know, he was trying to go into guys and either he was holding the ball a little too far out and that allowed them to disrupt it or block him. I just thought his physicality was a whole lot better in this game. Getting 12 rebounds. I believe that's the most he's had in a game since he's been back. Only
7 stocks.
7 stocks, yeah. 3 steals, 4 blocks, 2 of 4 from 3. That's encouraging stuff. I loved every single one of his 3-point attempts. I thought those are the exact type of shots you need to take and make. The first one of them was actually against the contested closeout, and the rest were, hey, the ball flowed to me, and I'm going to take this shot. That's the kind of stuff I'd like to see. And, you know, I think some nights he's going to have a little bit better touch inside, or he gets to the free throw line a little bit more on those attempts. But I just liked him not going back to kind of those fadeaway shots and those less assertive takes to the basket, just because it wasn't always yielding positive results.
Yeah, I thought he was really, really great on the defensive end. And, like, in that, especially in that third quarter, you could really tell the team was like, okay, enough, Jake LaRavia and Gigi Jackson. You can pivot all you want, brothers. We're going to be right here.
I like Gigi a lot, man. I really like him
fan,
as a player.
Big fan. I know a lot of people like Vince Williams a lot and think he's like the hidden gem of the season for Memphis. I think Gigi is right up there with him. Like 19 years old. Unbelievable with that size and athleticism. However, it felt like once the Cavs came out of that third quarter, and really a bit of the second, their offensive process was just so bad that it was hard to notice. But they were just swallowing up Grizzlies' possessions. I think that this Cavs defense with those two bigs, like, yeah, they're good shot blockers, but I think so much of what makes the Cavs defense great most of the time is their dissuasion, you know, the you know, taking contested but ugly shots, you know. They play those. This was a noticeable defensive effort in the second half, where they were erasing shots, meeting guys at the rim and just absolutely stuffing them. And you know, that's what you're supposed to do. You know, I'm not trying to like gas them up too much, because like with this beat up of a team with this level of, you know, talent on the floor, you do need to send some shots packing. But you know, seven blocks between Mobley and Allen, and I think Mobley had a few really nasty ones. It was fun to see.
Yeah, it definitely was fun to see. And you know, I got to give Jared Allen a lot of credit. I was frustrated watching the first half. There's just, you know, mishandling some of those passes on the interior, and the touch wasn't necessarily there. I didn't really feel him on the defensive end, and I was sitting there at halftime being like, the Cavs, like the paint's open and we're just not taking advantage of it. Like the few times that Jared got the ball there, those possessions weren't ending in a positive way. And I just really liked that. It seemed after he got that dump off pass from Garland and got that big dunk, like he just kind of kept that momentum going. I thought his intensity on the defensive end picked up. Obviously he was finishing inside and really kind of helped spark that run. Just in the first half, you just didn't feel that impact from him. And the minutes that when they went to that stagger of Mitchell and Allen out there, that lineup just did not work in the first half. It was struggling. I believe they got outscored by 12 to 15 points. Those were really the minutes that the Cavs were losing in the first half. So for that group in particular to come out in the third quarter and build on the momentum that the starters had got already in that game, that was positive to see. I like seeing that problem solving on the fly, that, you know, just because a game is starting out one way doesn't mean it necessarily has to continue that way. I think we've seen a little bit too much of that over the stretch. And, you know, as much as this is a very limited version of the Memphis Grizzlies, we've seen it go off the rails against some teams that they just shouldn't lose to since the All-Star break. So any positive step in that direction, I think, is something that at least for one night we can feel a little good about.
Yeah, I went and just checked because you mentioned that early Allen Mitchell shift in the first quarter. Our friend Plot and Roll on Twitter, big Chase Down supporter, just dropped his tool to check where you can check full rotation plots. And
such a great tool. Really cool.
I'm gonna take it full real quick just so you guys can see it. Plot and Roll at Plot and Roll on Twitter post this. You can really see how kind of the shape of the game plays out. And and what you can see there is that you are right. Allen and Mitchell were -9 in their early shift. And it really took Mobley and Garland kind of coming back into the game at the end of the first and early second to start reclaiming control a little bit. So your eye test wins, my friend.
It often does. Look at me. I'm so humble. The other thing that I thought was interesting from this game was that the Cavs set their franchise record for most threes made in a season. That is wild to me, man. And I think obviously that is trending up around the league. So it makes sense that would occur. But we've seen some great Cavs offenses. And, you know, I always think back to that 2017 team, which for my money is still the best Cavs roster that was ever assembled, and the way they were able to bomb away from three. it's just funny to think that this team, given, you know, the fact that they haven't been healthy, that they have had these stretches where guys are in and out of the lineup and they haven't been able to get up as many threes as you'd like to see, that this is the one that has set that record.
Yeah, it was, you know, we asked the team to go get more shooting, and mission accomplished in a lot of ways. You know, they did that. They went and got guys that were going to get up threes, that were going to make a lot of threes. And, you know, again, it feels like they did this despite really not having that good of a year shooting from three.
Yeah.
You know, it some of that I think is, you know, representative of the modern era, but I think some of it is just their roster construction just tilted towards it more.
Yeah.
And obviously Sam Merrill's emergence also helped on that front as well in terms of just playing that volume game. But I feel like, you know, it's just more evidence to me that they built a roster that I really quite like. They just haven't, you know, consistently been able to have the form that I think I hope they would have.
Yeah, like your three spacers in that starting lineup all kind of took a step back. Now, Max has worked his way back to 35%, which is the same as it was last year in Miami, on basically the same volume. So you could call that a push, but I think it was evident.
I'd be interested in the openness ratings year to year. We can check that out after.
Yeah, I really want to have a look at that. But I think, you know, that middle of the year stretch where he was really dealing with a lot of knee soreness, that had a big time impact on his three-point shooting. Donovan's three-point shooting has dropped off this year. Obviously, Darius has had the same thing happen to him with the various issues that he's had. So for them to be able to do that in a year where, hey, those are the three guys in that starting lineup that you're really kind of banking on to add the spacing. Like, I think, honestly, that's a big part of why the lineup data, like the starting lineup group, the reason that it's dropped off from last year, having a 122 offensive rating with Isaac Okoro out there to a 113 this year, like that's staggering. But again, some of this does come down to the era that they're in. Carter, do you want to take a guess what the 2017 Cavs, what the offensive rating was that year?
Oh, man. The offenses have gotten so nuts. 115.
112.8.
Wow. Offense has gotten bananas.
Well, offense has gone nuts. And you know, I've enjoyed the way that the game's been called since the All-Star break, you know, allowing a little more physicality. I don't think that there's any way from like a rule standpoint without like really kind of bastardizing the game. Like, I don't think you could really put the genie back in the bottle. Like, I think skill has just gone to such a high level, but I think skill has gone to such a high level that you don't need the same level of help from a freedom of movement standpoint. So what they're doing now, where guys are allowed to be a little bit more physical and whatnot, I think that's the right way for the game. And that's really the change I want to see. Like, sometimes when you hear people talk about offense, it's get rid of the corner three and I want this rule change, I want this change, blah, blah, blah. We don't need to go to gimmicks and that kind of stuff when we can just do simple changes first and test out what happens if you allow defenders to play defense. What happens if you're letting them be entitled to their space and shuffle their feet, and if they're straight up and that hand's not reaching in, then it's not a defensive foul. If the offensive player is going straight into your chest, that's an offensive foul, whether or not your feet are set.
All I wanted was to get rid of the drifting side layup that doesn't get near where your body isn't even going towards the rim. That foul draw attempt was my least favorite in the history of the sport, and it seems like mostly those are not getting rewarded. So yeah, it's really fun to see the team break that record, and you know, again, even in a non-optimal season, we're still seeing those kind of basic values still being adhered to. Justin, shall we standings watch? Should we discuss a little bit where things stand? Because you're teaching me stuff before the pod.
Yeah, you know, I guess class is in session, baby. The nice thing is, and I think the main takeaway right now is that the Cavs are, at least when it comes to home court in the Eastern Conference, they now control their own destiny. They do not need any more help than they have currently have. have had, if they beat Indiana and they beat Charlotte, no matter what happens, they would be hosting a home court series. I think that's really important.
And I'm sorry, I want to get this take off before you go through all the scenarios, because I think it's important. One, obviously, it's good to have home court advantage. But two, this team needs continuity. They need as much time as possible to kind of find their mojo, to recover, and not having to hit the road that extra day. You basically buy yourself a full extra 5 days in Cleveland.
Yeah. It's really, really nice to have.
It's really important.
Especially for everything that this team has been through. And also, like, realistically, you're potentially looking at a matchup against the Orlando Magic or the Indiana Pacers, like teams that haven't been there. And having them start on the road too, I think gets them a little bit out of their comfort zone. That's a little bit of a feather in their cap.
Cavs playoff crowd.
Yeah.
Who are raucous.
Yeah. The crowd is always amazing at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. And Orlando lost tonight against the Milwaukee Bucks without Giannis. That's a bit of a surprise, especially with Giannis ruled out for the remainder of the regular season. Obviously, my Achilles PTSD kicked in when he dropped to the ground. But I was very happy to hear that it was calf-related and there was no serious damage to his Achilles. So, that's a thrill, because I think Giannis is so important to the league, and I just don't want to see anything like that happen to anyone. But as it currently stands, Cavs are in fourth. They do have the potential to move up to third. That would be possible if Milwaukee loses their game against the Oklahoma City Thunder on Friday, as well as their season finale against the Orlando Magic. The important thing to keep in mind is Milwaukee and Orlando play each other last day of the year. So one of those teams is getting a loss no matter what. So the Cavs would obviously clinch third if Milwaukee loses both games and the Cavs win both games. Cavs can clinch home court Friday if they beat the Indiana Pacers and the Orlando Magic lose to Philadelphia. Philly is riding a 6-game win streak and has looked awesome with Embiid back. So, you know, that's a real possibility there. If the Cavs do lose to Indy, obviously we would be hoping for Orlando to lose to Philadelphia either way, because then the Cavs could clinch home court even with a loss to Indiana against the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, and then there is still a very unlikely road to the 2 seed, which is that the Bucks lose at least 2 games, the Knicks lose 2 of their final 3, and they play they play Boston, which is tough, but then they are they're at Boston, but Brooklyn, then close out their season
Brooklyn and Chicago.
Versus Brooklyn, versus Chicago. They would kind of have to be throwing. They'd have to be blowing it to lose one of the to lose one of those final two.
But I penciled the Knicks in at 2. Like, yeah, I just kind of assume that the Knicks are going to be the 2 seed.
I mean, you really can't count on anything in this weird middle of the upper middle class of the East. But yes, I mean, ultimately you expect New York to be at the 2 seed at this point, and now it's just a matter of how close, how high, one, the Cavs just need to close the season well. No matter what, they just need to close the season well.
Their form matters far more than where they end up in the standings.
Yeah, because if they're in bad form, it doesn't really matter where they are in the standings long term, especially in terms of maneuvering around for second round matchups and things like that. And in some cases, staying where you are is actually probably easier in the first round, because you don't risk a chance of somehow jumping up to 2 and playing a Philly or Miami, or even playing Philly in the 3-6.
Yeah.
However, I think the form is really what matters here, and so that's really important to say. It's just wild that it's this close, that the Cavs, despite this functional free fall. In the stand, I feel like most years the Cavs would be flirting with the 7 seed, and they still have 2 in play technically, which is pretty crazy. And I think it just goes to show how a lot of teams are dealing with a lot of things the Cavs are dealing with, and there is, and no one's coming into the postseason like feeling themselves that well in the East, really, except Boston and maybe Philly, who have won six in a row.
Like, all, really, where they're at now, like 47 wins is a lot of wins. Like, that's not an insignificant number. And it's taken a big time slide since the All-Star break to, you know, fall down to the level that a lot of these other teams have been at this season. But, you know, like, it's still, they've accomplished a lot. And it's just disappointing because we know that this team can be so much more. I think that's the curve that we judge them against. They have set a standard that we're going to hold themselves to, right? And like, it's just been a very, very, very tough year. And I think we just keep holding on to that little flicker of hope that they can rediscover their form in time, that having next week off before the playoffs is going to be enough to get this group right. And, you know, there are plenty examples of teams that have kind of stumbled into the playoffs and found their footing at the right time. And I would love to see the Cavs be that group. I think that would be a real feather in their cap in a season where they've overcome a lot of adversity and they've shown a lot of toughness, but they've also shown that the effort that they put in those times has really worn on them. And we kind of wonder, do they have another fight left in them? For the Cavs to answer the bell and say, yes, we do. Yes, we can come out and win Friday against Philadelphia. Yes, we can clinch home court. Yes, we can go out there and win a playoff. What did I say?
You said Philadelphia.
Oh, I was cooking. You know,
sorry.
You know, it is what it is. But yeah, say, yes, we can go out there. We can win against Indiana. We can clinch home court. We can win a playoff series. Like, I think that would really, you know, speak a lot to the mental fortitude of this team, but they're going to have to go out and show it because, you know, still to this point, yes, they beat Memphis, but it wasn't a complete 48-minute effort, and that's what we really want to see out of them.
Yeah, I mean, how important is this Indy game, man? Huge. You know, if they lose this one, you know, all of a sudden you're back to flirting with the sixth seed. You know, and that gets very possible very fast.
Realistically, it's 3-6 right now. Like that's where we're at.
Yeah. And if you really ask me what I thought, I think 4 does feel, with all the different ways that it can play out, it does feel like 4 is the most likely outcome because you can lose to Indiana and still very comfortably land at 4, mm-hmm. depending on how these other games play out. But wouldn't it just feel so much better going into the playoffs with 3 straight wins, winning a game you need to win against Indy? It just feels like, you know, again, like we talked about this in the last pod, which was a much more dire pod, no doubt about it. But like we talked about, like, what can you learn from these final 3 games? Is there anything to take, or is this just whatever, get to the postseason, see if they can figure it out? And like, again, I just want to see them. And I kind of made the case, nothing this team can do is going to make me think an Eastern Conference Finals run is, they're really ready for that right now.
Mm-hmm.
I just think I would love to be pleasantly surprised, but I'm just not going to learn anything in the regular season that gets me there. But I think if they go out and they handle Indiana at Rocket Mortgage Field House on their home floor, then close out Charlotte to end the year, then like all of a sudden it's like, okay, I think this team might be ready to really compete in the first round.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. And, you know, there's a variety of ways that this can play out. Like you mentioned that we can still pass Orlando if we lose on Friday to Indiana. That might result in Indiana being the 4 seed and the Cavs being the 5. Like there's a lot of ways that this can still play out. So the best way to guarantee that they can go out and get home court is by winning Friday. Like plain and simple, you win that one, you basically clinch home court, at least in my mind, because I feel good about our ability to beat Charlotte last game of the year.
Well, they'd better. one of those things where you'd better.
Otherwise, you and Kylie are going to have more missing people jokes.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of, you know, that you certainly will. Though Atlanta lost to Charlotte, which I guess, whatever, it doesn't really matter. They're locked where they are at 10. But yeah, man, it's we're coming down to the wire. You know, I'm excited to start breaking down a playoff series and figuring out kind of what's going to happen. But yeah, a fun fact, Danny Cunningham tweeted, if Miami wins one of its final two games, both versus Toronto, it will be the first time in the history of the Eastern Conference that the East has eight teams with 45 wins or more.
Wow.
So,
I mean, outside of Boston, it's been flat. Like, it's been a very, very flat.
The depth of the league is bananas, man.
Yeah, and you know, I think some of it is teams like us coming back to the pack. Like, that's happened to the Bucks. It's happened to us.
You just also have a few cellar dwellers that are really, really rough. I mean, Brooklyn's 11th, and they're 16 games under 500.
Remember people tried to tell me that was a playoff team?
I know.
People lied to me.
That was a weird... I've never seen you come out so hard against a random team that no one was even talking about.
And it's not even like that was playing beef or anything like that. Like that,
yeah, you just really didn't like him. You had a gut feeling and you stuck to that, buddy.
Intellectually, it pissed me off. Like, it just drove me absolutely insane. I don't know what that was, but it just seemed to grind my gears. Still like a lot of their players. That's just a team missing an engine. And probably a few other
Barnes
things.
made the All-Star team 30 games under 500. Oof.
Yeah, we don't need to get into that one because this is a perfect time to wrap up this podcast and we don't need another half hour. So big thanks to everyone that tuned in live on YouTube. Make sure you like and subscribe. Click the notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast and you want to support us, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.